the light of what is important to the Internet Society and what the Internet Society is doing. And clearly, this is not just what I am doing. This is what the Internet Society, along with, you know, participation from chapters, reaching out to organizational members, working with all the stakeholders, is aiming to do. So it's, you know, it is a broad reach. Next slide, please. So going from the very general to the slightly more specific, key areas that are of interest, you know, in the upcoming year include global addressing. I think that nobody here this week would mistake that the transition from IPv4 to IPv6 is terribly important at this time. It's a complex issue, although technical. There are many perspectives and many interests and challenges to actually making that transition work. And so a lot of where we will be focusing is on ensuring that there is, you know, calm and accurate and unbiased technical viewpoint on what the current status is, what the options are for moving forward, and trying to facilitate some of the discussions between the many players that, you know, might otherwise not find reason to get to the same table to discuss things. For instance, we've put together a two-pager about the current state of IPv4 v6 transition, which if you stop by our booth here, you probably had the opportunity to see. I think in a large part, I have every confidence that the various stakeholders involved can move forward on, you know, on this issue, but the, you know, the experience is that the best way to encourage forward progress is to make sure that there's less of the fear, uncertainty, and doubt, and more of the clear, concise, and authoritative and unbiased information. So another area of interest then, sort of jumping down to the fourth bullet, is looking to pull together and provide collected technical resources. We're still working on how we want to, you know, make this, actually realize this, but there, one of the areas that we want to focus on is providing an authoritative or at least a clear set of pointers to relevant technical documentation on, you know, current topics, not the least of which is currently V4, V6, so that as a one-stop available resource for people looking to understand the current state of play in important internet technical issues. Another area of interest, always a driving interest for the Internet Society, is ensuring the common internet. That's sort of a play on tragedy of the commons, which I would argue the internet is not, but rather ensuring that it is not a fragmented set of networks, but rather that there is still the opportunity to have end-to-end networking at a technological as well as, you know, a service and end user point of view going forward, because that really is the true value of the internetwork. As Lynn mentioned, the Internet Society is clearly interested in the open standards process that's seen in its heavy support for the IETF, but it also goes beyond that in looking to make sure that we promote awareness of participation in the development of and eventual uptake of open standards on all the realms that touch the internet. So I think that's pretty much what I want to say about, you know, what we're doing in this space. So I will hand it back to Mark.
Thank you, Leslie. And now I'd like to introduce Karen Rose, who's our to my right, is our Director of Education and Programs. And Karen comes to us with a varied background, but in particular worked some years ago on some of the early, you describe it as privatization of the internet projects with the U.S. government, correct? Domain name system issues. So Karen has a great background to run our programs and is one of our satellite staff members based in the Asia Pacific region. So let me introduce Karen here.
Oh, yes. Okay, now we're up and running. Well, thanks for coming, everybody, again, and thanks for the introduction. Mark, Karen Rose, the Director of Education at the Internet Society. And given the focus on access at the IGF this week, I'd like to talk to you a little bit about ISOC's capacity building programs. I'll just give you an overall approach to what overview of what our approach is to capacity building in general. Overview a few education programs we currently undertake in the area, including talking a little bit about the ISOC fellowship to the IETF. I have a slide with a couple of resources of interest you might be want to look at, and then also talk a little bit about looking forward and where we're going on access issues. ISOC's approach to capacity building. Our first principle approach is we put people first and boxes second. The Internet Society doesn't regularly engage in programs that invest massive amount of heavy infrastructure in countries. The real key, we believe, to sustainable access and sustainable capacity building and growth is focusing on people, getting local champions, working with them to develop a project, and really at some stage, you know, the boxes and the wires are really secondary, and first it's really about the people. We do engage from time to time in helping to get certain equipment with our partners in places, but again, that is usually a secondary part of the programs and our approach. Second, we really focus a lot on skills for network operators. It's really important for network operators in local areas to have the skills, knowledge and capacity to make the most of the current infrastructure that they have, as well as to get them empowered to make informed choices about new infrastructure implementations. So we do spend a lot of time with the network operator community and ensuring that skills get to individuals that actually run networks on the ground. A second fundamental part of what we do is we help build communities. It's one thing to train individuals, but it's much more powerful and the momentum of those trainings can be sustained if you get people in groups that share a particular interest so they can share information and experience among their peers. And I'll talk about our CCTLD workshops and some work we're doing with IXPs a little later. Finally, we like to put technology in context, particularly for technologists. Part of our capacity building programs are focused on educating on policy and current topical issues of regional and international importance, not only to technologists, but we also bring in policymakers in these programs as well. But the point I want to make in terms of capacity building is it's really important to get network operators familiar and understanding with the policy issues and the current issues of their environment in which they're working. Just an overview of some of the core programs we had for this year. We have very extensive partnerships with the regional network operators groups. These include AFNOG, PACNOG. We're starting to do work with MENOG in the Middle East and others. We really view ourselves as partners with these groups. We fund fellowships for individuals to actually attend and get to these meetings because that can be a significant barrier in many parts of the world. We work with the NOGs on progression and where we might want to take the training programs and future planning as well. And I would just make one note that among this, we also are supportive of WALC in Latin America, which just took place a couple of one week ago. 1 week ago, and we have a long-standing commitment with WALC. How many of you participated in any of the INET conferences in the 1990s? Handful? Well, as you know, those were quite large international conferences, and to some extent, the NOGs, which we now support, have really focused to localize what was done at the INET conferences at that level. So what we do with what we call the INETs now is really hold conferences, and again, usually in partnership with NOGs and other events that bring together technologists and policymakers to discuss issues of contemporary importance. We also work with infrastructure communities and doing workshops in that area. As I mentioned, building communities that can sustain the education and information sharing when the trainers go is really important. So we work with organizations, we work with ICANN, in fact, NSRC, to do CCTLD technical training workshops. We're also doing some work with IXPs in Latin America and Africa. Again, bringing groups of people together that work on specific areas to sustain the knowledge. We also do work and support programs like FRIDA, which is an innovation and R&D small grants program. And we also work to provide targeted workshop support for various other smaller workshops. Some are national, some are, by national I mean just one country and not regional. We provide funding for trainers, identify speakers, and help those become quite robust. I'll just talk to you about a little bit about the ISOC Fellowship to the IETF, which is a program that we piloted in 2006, and this year is the first full year of this program. The fellowship funds the expenses from technologists from the developing world to actually attend IETF meetings in person. The reason why we do this is because it fosters a greater understanding about the work of the IETF by people in regions that might not otherwise be able to attend. It brings new people and new ideas into the IETF, and it really fosters technical leadership. I like to say we want to help people turn from standards consumers to standards contributors, and this is part of that process. As I mentioned, we piloted it in 2006 and fully launched it this year. And we send about 5 individuals to IETF meetings this year. This year we've sent about 5 individuals per IETF meeting, and there's 3 meetings. But in terms of the, by the time we reach Philadelphia, which is actually next year, but we just had our selection process, which covers 2 IETFs, we'll have had 26 fellows from over 20 countries supported by ISOC to attend the IETF. And I'd like to thank, in particular, we do go out and ask for companies to help contribute to this program, and I'd like to thank Google and Afilias in particular for making this program possible. Just one small note, we are going to be announcing the fellowship recipients for this coming IETF meeting in Vancouver, and also the recipients for Philadelphia either today or tomorrow. And just as a preview, we will actually be having, I think, 3 people are coming from Brazil, and I think there's a couple of more from the Latin American region as well. So there's really good representation in the program by Latin America. Just a couple of things to note. You might want to pick up an IETF journal, which overviews the current events of the IETF. We produce it after every meeting. We have a couple copies here. And we also run the Workshop Resource Center, which compiles training material from workshops that take place around the world into one place so people can access them after the trainings. And just very briefly, ISOC is going through a planning phase at the moment, and for our 3-year planning horizon, access, we really want to build and reinvigorate our longstanding commitment to ensuring and enabling access globally. We really want to influence the whole part of the access ecosystem. This, of course, deals with capacity building. This is also a policy component, as Frederick mentioned. We also want to focus a little bit more on challenges of underserved communities, and by this I mean multilingual issues, differently abled persons on the internet, and specific needs of rural, remote, and distant communities. And a key to this is really building on our strengths of our organizational partnerships, and also in particular our ISOC chapters and members. So with that, thank you.
All right, now we're going to have a little bit of a fire drill, because I think we're going to get you all guys to go off the dais. Well, we're going to go to questions at the end, was our plan there. We want to take a couple of questions? My boss has asked if we would have some questions, so I think we will go to questions now. A couple of questions, sure. Anybody who has any questions about the overview of ISOC's programs and activities? Yes, please. If you could stand up and use the mic and tell us who you are.
My name is Betsy Dugas, and I'm with New Humanity, and this is my first encounter with ISOC. I was just wondering, also encountering the many different organizations here, is there a chart that maps the intersection between you and some of the other organizations, like the many players in this whole field?
It's a good suggestion.
And it's Vince Cerf again. one of the early executive directors of ISOC was a guy named Tony Rutkowski, and Tony drew what he called an organogram, and it described all of the entities in the telecom universe that included a lot of the ISTAR, you know, the ISOC and ICANN and this, that, and the other. We really ought to resurrect that, because there are people like you, and now me too, trying to keep track of all the different organizations that have an interest in internet-related things. And that universe got bigger as the network got more penetrant and as more people were involved and concerned and interested in it. So, yeah, we should do that. In fact, you'll find there is an increasing amount of interaction and coordination among the various groups. ISOC and ICANN, for example, have cooperated very closely together in a number of things, including activities here at IGF. So, yeah, that's a good action item. I don't know who you're going to hand that to. But
Well, actually, this may be one of the first times we're ahead of you, Vince. We actually have a chart like that.
Great.
And one of the things we need to do, it's Miriam actually helped pull it together with a lot of support from the internet community, and it shows all the RIRs and ICANN and IANA and ISOC and the IETF, IRTF, IESG and working groups. And we actually need to put it up on the website. We should actually make each one of those links live, both with a short two-sentence description of what those organizations are and a link to their web page. But we should actually put that right someplace very central. It is a complex chart, and it's actually a little scary. And no, seriously, because, you know, those of us that live in this model, you know, we know where the boundaries are and the responsibilities, because you live them and you work them. But when you look at that chart, it has led some people through the WSIS and WGIG to sort of, I think, actually be frightened of the model, because they can't see a central point of control. And they can't see. I know, but it still frightens. And we'd like to get that message across without frightening the hell out of them. You know, so that's the challenge in terms of making it responsible. So we will make that public, and I think the links will actually help as well.
Good. I think we probably will need to. Maybe I could chat with you briefly afterwards, just to get a sense of some of the. Maybe some of the socially oriented organizations that are here that I think that's what you were mentioning also, was some of the non-technical organizations, right?
Just in general, people seem to be talking about common things, like everything you mentioned here, other people have talked about in other sessions, and it's like, well, if you're doing it and they're doing it, you know, it'd be nice to see some kind of diagram that puts it together.
Good.
The comment about they're doing it, and, you know, everybody is doing it. In fact, that's exactly right. There is an awful lot of room here to get things done. If we want to get another billion people up on the net in a serious way, there's more than enough work for every institution in that organogram and then some. So I don't find that necessarily to be a bad overlap or a conflicting overlap. Mostly what it represents from my point of view is mutual willingness to work towards that particular goal. So this is a good thing, not a bad thing.
Were there any other questions from the audience? Okay, well, maybe we'll... Sure, Glenn.
I just want to make one last point with the IETF. The IETF fellowship program we have is a fully mentored program, which is why the numbers are relatively limited. There are actually repeat visits, if you want, to the IETF. The fellows are actually asked to take those learnings back to their own communities, share their experiences, talk about the work of the IETF, and help demystify it a little bit. The point I really wanted to make is that the work of the IETF is actually done online. You don't need to go to the meetings to participate in the work of the IETF. The consensus, the decisions are taken online. Everything is freely available. You don't need to be a member of the IETF. You don't have to pay to read RFCs. You do have to have some patience. and the process, like any process, is not all that evident when you're first trying to get in. So one of the things that Leslie will be looking at is certainly how we make that much more accessible. And we have a commitment to do that on behalf of the IETF in any case, which might even include some kind of startup guides as you're going to get on the IETF or something. But I wanted to leave people with a very clear understanding that the work of the IETF occurs online. You don't need to be a member. It is accessible. There are some relatively easy places to start. And if people are interested in participating in the IETF or tracking the work a little bit more, don't hesitate to talk to any of us here. It is a great vehicle for understanding the internet, how it developed historically, where it's heading today, and what some of the opportunities are.
Very good. If you all have some more questions you think of later, I think we can circle back to them at the end of the session. So maybe what I'll do now is, okay.
I probably haven't done my homework, but do you have a summary of the various projects that have been funded by ISOC and how they came out? And the reason I'm interested in this is twofold. One of them is just to know what happened, but also to point out that you've arranged things so that you can get joint funding activities. You have matching grant arrangements, and I think that's a great way for people to accelerate some of the work of people around the world who want to make more internet happen.
One of the things that we are doing in particular with these programs is, I just joined ISOC about a year ago, but ensuring that we do have appropriate follow-up, we do have appropriate documentation of this, we can explain more why these are important and what is actually being done. For the fellowship program, for example, we've gone through a review process and we're sending questionnaires, so we really want to ensure that the programs are effective, and if they're not as effective as we'd like them to be, there is a loop there where we can get the feedback to change. And then also another part of that is articulating better what we're doing and why. And that goes into the issue of sponsorship as well.
Very good. If I could ask Dawit and Sebastian and our four ISOC ambassadors who are going to be talking next to come on up here. If you all would, we'll get you all to come on up. And this is a nice segue, actually, because Sebastian and Dawit, who run our regional bureaus in Latin America and in Africa, really are the people who get to have the most contact with our chapter members. And to tell you a little bit about the ambassadors program, I believe we have 11 ambassadors here. Is that correct, Matthew? We have 11 ambassadors from, I think, 10 different countries. Around the world, and they all are members of ISOC who have participated in various ways in the ISOC process. And we chose four of our coming up, Charles. So see, we have two now, and I'm looking for two more. Come on up, Raj and Aziz. So. But we brought them in to try and give the IGF process a little bit of information from the ISOC chapters and from what's happening in specific countries in the developing world and around the world there. So why don't I start okay with you, Dawit? So we have Dawit Bekele, Dr. Dawit Bekele, who lives in Ethiopia, in Addis, and he has been now for a little over a year the Bureau Manager for Africa for the Internet Society, and I'll let you start.
Thank you, Mark. So as Mark just said, the African Regional Bureau has been established just a year ago in September 2006. And why? In fact, this comes from the desire of the Internet Society to go to the regions. The African Regional Bureau was the first one, but there is another one in Latin America, and there will be another one very soon in Asia, as it has been said again. The bureaus work across all departments, so there is nothing in the Internet Society that does not concern the bureaus. That is one of the reasons why it is difficult for me to make a presentation, because whatever I have to say has already been said by the other departments, but I'll try not to repeat too much of what they have said. So the Bureau promotes activities and initiatives at regional and sub-regional levels, and not much at local levels, because we have chapters that are doing that at local level. Let me talk a little bit about ISOC in Africa. There are a number of chapters in Africa. In fact, I can say that Africa is probably the region with most chapters, because from what I have heard just a few minutes ago, there are 80 chapters around the world, 80 plus, and there are already 20 chapters in Africa, which is, I think, a big part of the pie. There are a number that are under formation, Mauritania, Chad, Togo, Liberia, and there are a lot of interest in other countries. In fact, the last year, there were many, many interests in ISOC in Africa. The regional bureau is really a resource for the chapters, and we try to help as much as possible so that they can do more activities, they can be more present in their countries. What are the activities that the bureaus are directly involved? First, we have capacity building. As it has been said by the Education Department, ISOC has focus on capacity building. That is not today. It has been that way right from the beginning. And we have the annual INET meeting in particular. It took place in Abuja, Nigeria this year, and it will take place in Rabat. We have that in general together with AFNOG and AFRINIC meetings. We are big supporters of AFNOG, AFRINIC, AFTLD. For instance, we support the activities in training in for network operators with AFNOG. We have various activities with AFRINIC, including locally. For instance, we have been supporting IPv6 trainings in Benin, in Mauritius, etc., and also in Senegal. AFTLD, we have been supporting CCTLD trainings around the world, and particularly in Africa, for the last few years. Something maybe that is taking importance is in the standardization area. You have heard from Karen the activities, the fellowships to ITF. A lot of Africans have benefited from that, and I hope many more will benefit. I know that she told you about Brazil, but I know that there are Africans in the coming ITF fellows, and I'm happy about that. We are working also in increasing the awareness in standardization. I was frightened the first time I went to the ITF meeting. There was practically no African participation, and I thought it's because it's very far, etc. But I realized the more I look into it that the reasons are not really justified. It is possible. IETF is a very open organization. There are, from what I have heard, there are a lot of people who have never been to an IETF meeting and who are really big participants, and there's no reason why Africans cannot do that. And well, bandwidth or connectivity, I don't think it's really... Yeah, well, the people are, there are a lot of people. I know I come from the university, and I know that many universities are today connected. So it is really possible. It's just a question of awareness, I believe. So we are trying a lot to increase the awareness. We are, for example, presenting. I was at the ITU meeting in Kigali to make presentation on IETF, and I have been to a university and will continue to do that so that people know that it is important to participate to the building of internet, because that is what it is all about. ISOC also supports a lot of projects in various areas, IPv6, training, connectivity. Those are at local, sometimes at sub-regional levels. In public policy, we try to act more and more in the public policy arena, and we try to use the expertise that is available locally. A regional policy advisory group has been formed about a year ago, and it is trying to advise us in what needs to be done. We are doing a lot of things on internet governance in the last year that I'm going to indicate in the next slide. We are trying to contribute in bringing the internet governance debate in Africa. It's not enough for Africans to come to the internet governance forum meetings, but there should be debates at regional and local levels. We have done some this year, and we are going to continue in this area. It is very important. We have had a meeting, a very interesting meeting in Abuja in May 2007, where we have identified mainly what are the priorities for Africa, because one of the difficulties, as you can imagine here, is that internet governance is huge. There are so many things to think about, and with the limited human resources that we have, it's very difficult to do everything. So we have to know what is very important for us. And that is why our meeting in Abuja concentrated on that. And we had a meeting with, in partnership with UNECA, but others as well, a consultation on internet governance just less than 2 weeks ago in Kigali, together with Connect Africa meeting organized by ITU, and we have tried to identify how we can cooperate regionally and we can have local discussions. What are our plans? As it has been said, we are going to do everything as much as possible by involving members and chapters to implement our missions and visions. Maybe because of lack of human resource, because until very recently there were very few people who were doing all the things that we are doing today. Now we have more resources, and I think we can do more at the local level as well. We can reach the members and the chapters. We'll collaborate with other organizations in the regions so that internet becomes really for everyone. I'll stop here, but before that, I would like to invite all of you who come from Africa to contact me so that you tell me what are your desires, what do you want ISOC to do, I'll be happy to continue the discussion offline. Thank you.
Thank you. I think I'd like to ask Sebastian if you wanted to make a few comments. No PowerPoint, right?
No, I have no PowerPoint. And
that's okay.
As my friend Dawid said, what can I say that hasn't been said already? I mean, and after Dawid, I'm in worse position because we almost do the same job in our region. So he described it. You can change, the cities, or you can change, put another country in what the countries he mentioned. And he would have already described what is our work in Latin America. But I would like to point just in a few minutes some characteristics that Latin America and the Caribbean has. It's a particular region, as every region is particular. We have a lot of different countries. There is a lot of different realities and needs that we have to address. My region, the region I'm working in, comprises from Mexico in the north to Argentina and Chile in the south, and it's Brazil is a different country in Latin America because they speak Portuguese instead of Spanish, and every single country with its own characteristics. And we also have the Caribbean, and the Caribbean is a region in itself and with a certain needs in itself. So, but when you talk about the Caribbean, it's not just the Caribbean, and you cannot have it as a unity. I mean, it's not just one Caribbean. You have the Spanish-speaking Caribbean, the non-Spanish-speaking Caribbean. Inside the non-Spanish-speaking Caribbean, you have the Dutch-speaking, the English-speaking, the French-speaking Caribbean. It's not the same. Even though, if you like to particularize, between the English-speaking Caribbean, there's the big countries and the smaller islands. You have Jamaica and Trinidad and Tobago on one side, Barbados, because it's not that big, but it's very rich. So, and you have the smaller islands on the other side, all beautiful. Let me tell you something. But so, what is the challenge to ISOC in this particular region? We have to address all these differences, and we have to spread what we think that we should say all about among different cultures, different languages, and different approaches, different realities. So that is a challenge, and I would like to invite all of you to share this work with us, because there is a lot, and independently of when are you coming from, because it's not just because you are from Latin America, you have to work in Latin America. And the exact way that the IETF was described here as an online collaboration forum, we have to work all over the world the same way. And we can collaborate with Africa, being based here in Brazil. You can collaborate from Asia in Latin America. So what we have to do, and I think I will not describe our particular programs because it has been described already, but I would like to invite you to join this organization, this family, because it's the outreach is so high. And there is so much things to be done in the future that we all need you. So we need you here in Latin America, we need you in Africa, we need you in Asia, and even we need you in the US, we need you in Europe, in the developed country too. So just please join us. I mean, we are here to do good things, and we strongly believe that. Nothing else. Thank you very much.
I wanted to take a quick pause here just to see if anybody had any direct questions for our two regional bureau managers. We're managers. We're next going to talk to four of our chapter folks, and we do have one question here. So I'll let you take the mic there and go ahead.
It's Vint Cerf again. The question I have is specifically about the African activity. One of the things that is notably missing is regional infrastructure, interconnections among the various countries. And yesterday, I think I heard of some plans and projects and aspirations, fiber connections and fiber landings and so on. Is that an area where the Internet Society can be of some help? Is there a way to cause coalitions, focus of attention? To encourage some kind of regional networking capability, which is absent right now.
Well, that is definitely an interesting area. Africa is definitely the least connected with the rest of the world, but also within itself. And there are a number of projects that are working in that area. I am personally following this very as much as I can. And right now, things are not very clear, but definitely we'll have some role to play in this. What we are currently working is avoiding, for example, that the traffic goes outside and come back by promoting IXPs. We have had a few workshops in that area, and I think the connectivity itself is also a major issue in which we have to work.
Can I add something? It's very interesting the how correlates the IXP and the international interconnection cost charges, etc. Because what I learned in this year is that when you speak about the international interconnection cost or the infrastructure itself that you have, because it's almost the same effect. I mean, not having the infrastructure or paying a lot of money for the infrastructure you have. When you deaggregate that process, you came up that the basic problem lies inside the countries, our countries. How so? I mean, not being able to negotiate as a peer. Ouch. Yeah. not being able to negotiate as a peer with the tier one carriers outside our region is just because we are not able to aggregate traffic. If you aggregate the traffic all over the region, you will be a peer of the tier one, so the interconnection cost wouldn't be an issue anymore. But aggregating traffic all over the region is not easy if you are not aggregating traffic inside your country, first. And there is no way you can aggregate traffic through an IXP. I mean, there is no way you can aggregate traffic inside your country if you have no local content. So the first thing you have to address is inside your country. I mean, there is a lot of external problems, but we also have to work on a local and national level. It's a two-way. I mean, it's really important to address the issues just in two ways. It's not like we are developing countries and we are being robbed by, I mean, we have a lot of things to do ourselves first. So this is an extremely important issue, and it's basically up to us. So solving that problem is up to us. We have to come out with a solution. So.
This is theorem number 203. It reads, every time you want to do something, you have to do something else first. And here you are.
I think we have a question on the far corner there, if we could get the microphone over there.
Thank you very much, Pierre Dangino, president of ASAF chapter in Benin. Concern I have, and if we do have any sort of best practice to share here, is how far can we engage with what I would call decision makers in different countries? Your question, for instance, also boils down to how far maybe we are able to lobby some of the decision makers. And when I mean decision makers, might be the minister, for instance. Now, last time we were in Benin discussing IPv6, we had the minister there, of course. But he has no clue what the internet in the society was, and we have to explain those things. But I do feel that there is something to do in terms of lobbying, in terms of having them also be part even of this internet society. So I don't know whether there is any example or best practice to share how far you were able to engage with these sort of people, because I feel that this is also what is missing. And I always tell my friend, you need to see how we engage with those, you know, policymakers as well, so that they know that you are here to assist. You know, I think that's also is something that's missing in our what we've been doing in Africa.
Can I say that? Yes, Frederick Donk again, public policy. You write to the pound. I feel that we should shamelessly go and see decision makers, because there is an expectation at regulatory level and legislative level that we could help ISOC as such a position that we could indeed offer a new angle of vision for policymakers. We already started this in different regions, and we will indeed increase this, because this is just not about, this is about enabling access also at the regulatory level, because we feel indeed that, just as Vinsurf just underlined, that if we help governments to create this environment where businesses actually can come and invest, this is also a solution. This is also what we will be promoting with decision makers, more competition and help them actually to achieve this with our advice and with what we can bring. So I got many different issues and topics. We could spend 2 hours, if you want, we will just discuss this. But indeed, at different region level, we do have different specificities. There are so many in Europe, but so many in Africa too, and we will address this indeed with regulatory level, at regulatory level with decision makers in those countries, because there is an expectation. This is what we heard also those days here in IGF.
So we have one more question in the back, and then maybe we'll push on to our chapter representatives.
Thank you. Thank you. My name is Amich Kimwangi, representing Kenya Internet Exchange Point. Could I make a request and say that I would really, really like that focus to not be entirely on policy, but to be focusing more specifically on internet economics. I think our governments truly understand how to collect tax. They know how to collect revenues. They know how to make money out of that. What they don't, I feel they have not fully well understood, is how to make money out of the internet and exactly what needs to be put right so that more money can be made. In essence, the policies they have are more inherent, and so they make just a little bit more money, but not as much money as they would want to make. So if that can be the focus, internet economics for the governments, I think will probably change how things happen in that part of the world. Thank you.
Anybody want to comment on that? Or maybe what we will do now is switch now to our, everybody can stay up here, but we'll go to our chapter ambassadors. And first I would like to introduce Dr. Abdul Aziz Hilali. Dr. Hilali has a long experience with the internet. He was a founder of, one of the founders of ISOC Morocco chapter in 1994. And we look forward to hearing from Dr. Hilali.
Thank you, Mark. our chapter, his name is MISOC, stands for the Moroccan Internet Society. Our chapter is created in November 1994. It was one of the first chapters in Africa. Its main activities have aimed at promoting the development of the use of the internet in Morocco by the general public, conducting training sessions on the use of the benefit of potential users with limited means, contributing to the efforts of human development and setting up a relation with the other ISOC chapters, particularly in Africa. We have about 400 members, and we are also at large structure in ICANN. We have organized nine national days and today this event is recognized in Morocco as the leading conference on the internet, and a quick reading of the titles of these days, we can see that they have dealt with topics such that e-government, civil society and internet, human rights and internet, online administration for citizens, to serve citizens, internet governance in Africa. The last day, it was in Marrakech, one day before ICANN meetings, we debate about governance of internet in Africa. We have a big project in Morocco. The name is School Cyber Project. This project is on introducing the youth to the internet. The aim objective of this project is the training of a large number of users in Morocco through youth centers, cyber cafes, schools, club of informatics, and setting up of an accreditation system of cyber cafe to train a large number of persons in the use of the internet. And the training, the objective is in two phases, and the first one is to train the animators of youth centers and girls' halls, For this project, we have elaborated an educational kit of training. The main modules of this pedagogical kit consist of a bilingual in Arabic and French internet user for users, and a module of internet trainer the trainer, and a CD-ROM on self-training in informatics and internet. The school cyber project for teaching has been adopted by the National Commission supervising, to the nationwide program of equipping 8,500 schools with computers and making use of information technology an integral part of school curricula. This project is also implemented by the government secretariat in charge of the youth. The project consists to establish of 100 internet centers in youth centers and girls' halls. Summary of our most important activities in Morocco have been as follows. Co-organization with the regulator of Morocco in Marrakech of ICANN meeting in June 2006. Organization Eugenie Afrique 2006 in Marrakech. Organization of a workshop on weblog in the city of Essaouira for the benefit of handicapped men. Participation as jury member to the National Award of Digital Administration. And last year, we have also training 150 young male and female detainees about to be released on basic internet and informatics. The training lasted 3 weeks. This project was funded by USAID. We have also, 6 months before, created the Moroccan Task Force under ISOC Morocco for the development and the promotion to EPV6. In June, and we have organized the first summit in March 2006. Our current activity this year, we can sum it in two points. Project NADA, this project is funded by ISOC. The main objective of this project is to create a web portal which is dedicated to partially sighted. It is the first of its kind in Morocco. Its aim is to provide this category of people with a convenient, adapted, and flexible means of communication and information. And the second project is Project Internet Ça s'apprend. It's funded by the Section of Public Affairs of Ambassade of USA, and is a national program for training some 400 youth club leaders in power area. This is the homepage of the first project, and here you have the map of Morocco. Until now, we have 13 out of the program of 15 centers have been covered. It is proven to be a real success. And for the execution of this project, we have coordinated our efforts with the local NGO. Their help with the selection of these benefits has turned out to be a great importance. And finally, our future activities is to organize or to funding of the following special one day about e-government and internet in the desert to sensitize the local communities, authorities, and operators to the importance of investing in wireless connectivity. And thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Hilali.
Excuse mon accent en anglais, il n'est pas très bon.
Next, I'd like to introduce Dr. Hakikur Rahman, who is from ISOC Bangladesh. And let me call up the slide presentation here. Just a moment.
Good afternoon. We are not that senior like Morocco, but we have AIJOC Bangladesh was established in 2000. I have to say something with permission from Dr. Saif. I met him in July 2000 during a meeting of ICANN. I was talking about the formation of AIJOC chapter at that time. He instantly called Terry, I think, and told her that to assist us to form a chapter. And going back home in November 2000, we collected some members, and then we submitted the document. And in 2001, February 21, we got the recommendation. And it's the day also, it's a very remembering day for our nation. It was our Mother Language Day. Later on, it became the International Mother Language Day. So it's a good day for a formation of a chapter in our country. We have the executive committee as per mandate of AIJOC, chair, a vice chair, one secretary, one treasurer, and we have accommodated one organizing secretary so that take care of the organizing work. Currently we have 33 members. There were a bit more, but recently due to the email connectivity, some of them dropped. But hopefully in December, usually have our annual general member meeting, AGM. So hopefully we'll try to increase some more member by December. We have a website, aizocbd.org. It's not updated that much. Maybe long ago we could update it. Hopefully by January it will be regularly updated. But we have e-groups at Yahoo, aizocbd at yahoogroups.com. With relationship or partnership activity, we have done several remarkable thing in Bangladesh. We have assisted Sustainable Development Networking Program, UNDP funded program. We have assisted in their school program activity. We took part as a partner with USAID, World Computer Exchange of USA, UNDP, and ICMS, distributed about over 500 computers to over 200 schools. We assisted in selecting those schools and assisted in the training programs. Also, there is another partnership activity where we have assisted as AIJOC establishing the internet exchange in Bangladesh. It was established in August 2004, and BDIX has its own website, bdix.net. Over 20, the largest ISPs are connected, so it is improving our internet community. Like it was discussed that latency time has been increased, stability has been also increased, people behavior also improving. Though our traffic is very limited, but the IX is saving over 10 Mbps of local traffic. The partners were Packet Clearing House, the Sustainable Development Network of Bangladesh, and ISP Association of Bangladesh. It's a multi-stakeholder partnership, you can say. And we did another, we assisted another project in Bangladesh, like hosting the FRoot server in December 2005. It was a big event. It was telecasted, webcasted. I have given the still is in their server. I have given the URL. And the partner of this program was APINIC, Internet Systems Consortium, and SDNBD. And with APROOT server, you know, our stability of our internet has been much increased. And finally, I think I will talk about a little bit this school program, what we want now. We want to continue this school program under schoolnetbd.org banner. From January 2007, it has started working, and we are helping them to select schools and provide training to the teachers. And we are looking for long-term initiative. And hopefully, we have in mind to apply for again to convert BDIX platform from IPv4 to IPv6. In 2004 or 5, we applied. We couldn't succeed. But going back home after the AGM in December, we like to apply on behalf of ISOC. And I think that's all for our chapter's activity. Thank you very much.
Test. Very good. Thank you, sir. Thank you, doctor. Next, I would like to introduce Charles Mock, who is from ISOC Hong Kong. And Charles, I'll pull up your slide if you want to go ahead and just get started.
Hi. Good afternoon. Let me introduce to you about ISOC Hong Kong. And just a little bit of introduction about Hong Kong, in case you're not very familiar with it. We're a very small place, one city. With about 8 million people, we're part of China, and we have a relatively developed economy and a relatively advanced telecommunications and internet infrastructure. And we also have a very high adoption of broadband in Hong Kong already. We have even gigabyte services to the home. So our concern and the work that we do might be somewhat different from some of the regions that have presented so far. Now, in fact, we are a very young chapter of ISOC also. We were only formed in 2005. We have the next page, please. We have a lot of different stakeholders involved, including ISPs, academics, education institutions, infrastructure people, people from the domain name industry and from the telecom industry, security experts, and NGOs, social services. One of our council member, Dr. John Fong, is also with us here today. He's actually a social worker. So these are the typical main concerns that we have as an organization and among our group. Domain names and internet infrastructures, we work very closely with the CCTLD in Hong Kong, .hk. We're actually going to be very involved in the coming year with the formation of Creative Commons in Hong Kong. Those of you who might have some knowledge about the copyleft movement, we have been working very closely with other stakeholders in Hong Kong to try to get it going with establishing a Hong Kong version of it. Freedom of information and free speech, digital inclusion work, definitely. Security and network continuity, especially, for example, early this year when there was a major disruption of internet service in Hong Kong because of the earthquake in the near Taiwan. Hong Kong was one of the regions that were very severely affected for a few days. And we took it upon ourselves to try to help the government and the business community to educate users and especially small and medium businesses in planning for their network continuity. We engage with other user communities in Hong Kong, including the bloggers and the Wikipedians, which are oftentimes relatively disorganized and young people-oriented. I mean, we work with the Wikipedians, and some of them were primary school students. And we really have to work with them to help them get their organizations and get their activities going. Further promotion of the internet and the applications to the community, and also we hope to be able to work very closely with our mother country, China, with their internet community and working toward mutual benefit. These are some of the key engagements that we have. We happen to be working very closely in Hong Kong with our government, including the advisory committees under the government. Our Digital 21 Strategy Advisory Committee actually is the top government IT planning strategy committee within the government. We are also part of the working groups on various issues, including mobile applications and information securities. And also, we have been vocal in responding to a number of very important issues related to the internet, including spams, regulatory regime of telecommunications and broadcasting, digital copyright legislations, and domain name administrations. And we also work very closely, or beginning to work very closely, with a number of Pan-Asia internet communities like AP Rallo, APNIC, and so on, Dong Asia, and so on. Some of the key activities that we have held before in 2006, we had a conference. We actually co-sponsored, co-organized an event with the Wikipedians in Hong Kong. Jimmy Wales was there. It was the first Chinese Wikimedia conference that was ever held. Also, we work very closely with our partner, John Fong's organization, the Hong Kong Council of Social Services, in establishing the in helping the operation with the Digital Solidarity Fund. You might remember that this is something that WSIS talked about many years ago, but fortunately we got it going in Hong Kong from a little bit of government funding and contribution from the industry, big IT companies mainly. And we've been able to fund a number of very useful and very beneficial digital inclusion projects within Hong Kong because of that for the last 2 or 3 years. Some of the other key activities that we had a major conference on domain names only about a few months ago, Domains Asia 2007. We have been holding a number of forums and conference to educate and consult users and the industry on various issues, including spamming legislation, regulatory regime, and so on. We also are still working on an ISOC-funded project, hasn't finished yet, that is on the emergence of digital public sphere. Looking forward, there are a number of key activities in the coming year. We will be actually working with a group of architects to work on an interesting project. We think that we're going to organize a conference to discuss the role of technology in enabling people in the process of urban development. It actually has a lot to do more with not so much directly with the internet, but actually a lot to do with architecture, urban design, and preservation of historical buildings, because it tends to be a very controversial subject in a place like Hong Kong with the balance between conservation and development. And we think that actually technology has a big role and influence in these types of development. We're also going to be working with a number of bloggers to help them organize the first blogger conference in Hong Kong. And again, of course, Creative Commons will be our major effort in the coming year. So that would end my presentation. Thank you.
Thank you, Charles. And next, I'd like to introduce Rajneesh Singh, and he is the chairman of the PIC-ISOC, also known as the ISOC Pacific Islands chapter. And Raj, is your mic live?
Yeah, it's
fine. Okay, go ahead and get started, and I'll pull your slide up here in a minute.
Thank you. I'll do my presentation up here because I want to be up close and personal with my audience. Right, ISOC Pacific Islands. So we'll just wait for the first slide to come up. Quite intricate nested folders there. And it appears my presentation has been lost. Correct. Control L. Great, thank you. So I'll just run through some of our activities and initiatives that we've been taking part in. Next slide, please. Just a brief overview of the Pacific Islands. Some 22 island states and territories spread over 35 million square kilometers, so we are the liquid continent. Population ranges from less than 1,000 to over 5 million. We have something in the order of about 1,000 languages in the region. And the underlying theme is that we have remote communities and we live with the tyranny of distance. So ISAC in the Pacific Islands, we have roughly 500 individual members spread out over the region and outside the region. We have members from Russia, Germany, the US, so it's interesting. I guess they think themselves as Pacific Islanders, maybe. Our primary focus is to support ISOC objectives. However, we also support ICT development initiatives in the region. As you would know, access is a problem in the region. Therefore, we decided to expand our role in that sort of stuff. Now, we focus on local issues and regional needs. However, we also like to work with the global perspective. We have tried to invent or to establish ourselves as a trusted impartial advisor to governments and anyone else who cares to listen to us. This is important. The gentleman from Africa earlier asked about how do you engage with governments and so on. One thing we try and do is that, for instance, if I'm visiting a country, be it in the Pacific or elsewhere in Asia, where I happen to be floating around quite often, I try and go and see the local government or the policymaker or the regulator. And it works quite well. And when Dr. Cerf came to the Pacific, he's been there a couple of times now, we decided to try and set up meetings between him and government members so that, you know, Dr. Cerf's message and the Internet Society's message could be delivered better than perhaps we could. So I think that's quite important. So when you have people from the Internet Society floating through the region, it's a good idea to engage with them, to engage with your local governments and policymakers. Okay, I've covered the next one. Apart from all that, we decided to create some special interest groups because we have such a large number of members who work in different and diverse areas within the larger ICT arena. So with that, we focused on five initially, which are very, let's say they're popular sectors in the Pacific. These were FOSS-free and open source software, GIS and RS, Geographical Information Systems and Remote Sensing, IPv6, which in fact led to the establishment of the IPv6 Forum Pacific Islands and the first Pacific IPv6 Summit earlier this year, new media, and women in technology. In terms of our most regular event, or our largest event, is actually PACINET. This has been our annual conference and AGM since 2002. It's held in a different location each year, so it basically travels the Pacific so that we can engage with local communities. There was a thought that we held it in a country like Fiji, which is really the hub of the Pacific. But then the problem is we don't reach to other communities, so therefore we made the decision to move it across the Pacific. It's typically 6 to 9 days long with concurrent sessions. This year's conference was the largest ever, and we had to run three concurrent sessions to handle all that was in the program. It is the Pacific region's premier ICT conference, and from what we understand, it may be the largest regular event in the ISOC world, where we have over 300 delegates for the past 3 years. Out of those 300, between 100 and 150 are foreigners, and between 150 and 200 are locals. The conference itself has technical and non-technical streams. I'm not going to run through all that. So basically, anything you can think of, we try and cover as applicable to the Pacific. Part of our mandate should also be capacity building, particularly with education and training. So this year, and as well as last year, we ran various programs structured for the Pacific, which included security, DNS, voice over IP, core networking protocols, content spam, and of course IPv6. Just a little comment I'd like to make on the training. This year when we ran the sessions, we had APNIC help us out with the training sessions, which is quite kind of them. We only expected to run one session, but the demand was so high that IPv6 had to be run 3 times, spam and security had to be run twice. So it just shows that the hunger for knowledge people have, even in the remotest places of the world. In conjunction with this year's PACINET, we ran the first Pacific Regulators and Policymakers Summit, which Karen Rose and Lord were involved with from ISOC. We introduced this in conjunction with the Pacific Islands Forum Secretariat, which is the policy advisory and governance organization in the Pacific. This worked quite well, and we hope to establish this as a regular annual event. Next slide, please. Just a quick overview of what's happened in past PECINETs, and you'll see that there's a popular name on that list, which is Dr. Vinsurf. In 2005, we had it in Kiribati, which is part of what we call Micronesia within the Pacific, with a theme of rural technologies connecting and advancing remote communities through ICT. The keynote was delivered by Dr. Surf. Back in 2006, we put a bit more effort into it, and we got the Samoan Prime Minister to open the event. Again, the keynote was delivered by Dr. Surf, very kindly, who made time for us. The theme was the Digital Pacific. This year, we held our event in the Solomon Islands in Melanesia, and I nearly had my hat trick with Dr. Surf, but unfortunately, he had some last-minute engagements which he could not get out of. However, he was kind enough to send us a video message which we delivered at the conference. The keynote itself was delivered by Dr. Jimmy Rogers, who is the Director General of SPC, which is an organization which has operational responsibilities in the Pacific to deploy whatever policy advisory matters are decided on. Again, we had the Solomon Islands Prime Minister open the event. Next year, and what you will see here is we are trying to engage government, because in small and developing countries, the government plays a major, major role in anything that happens. So with this, we have now got to the stage where the 2008 PECINET bid was actually by the Office of the Prime Minister. So I will have my hat trick with the Prime Minister opening my conference again next year. That's a given. Some of the big picture issues we covered at PECINET 2007, and most of this I think you would have had in the sessions at IGF throughout this week and in the next day or so. One, need for relevant local content to drive local bandwidth demand. That's when IXPs can come into play. Bandwidth aggregation comes into play. Need technologies and infrastructure, IPv6, VoIP, peering local and regional IXPs, root server mirrors. We now have one root server mirror in the Pacific. We are planning on having another one very shortly. Security concerns. We are currently involved in setting up a Pacific Computer Emergency Response Team. In fact, this week in Fiji, there was a meeting held with various stakeholders to try and set some ground rules. And when I return, we hope to take that further. We have the Asia-Pacific CERT involved with us, as well as Australian CERT. So we hope to have something come out of that. ICT curriculum in education, relevant to now and the future, and to build technical capacity. Now, the next item is policy development. And we see this as something that's very lacking in not just the Pacific, but I think in a large part of the developing world, which is capacity building in terms of policy. And we hope to engage ISOC and Frederick a bit more in addressing this issue and how we can support local policymakers who really don't have the time or the resources to understand such policy issues as applied to the internet. And finally, internet governments. We were involved in IGF Rio. We are here, thanks to ISOC again. And hopefully in future IGFs, we will have some role to play as well. This concludes my presentation. I would urge you to join us in ensuring the internet is for everyone. And together, we can make good things happen. Thank you.
Thank you, Raj. We have gone a little bit late here, so I'd say that if somebody needs to leave, you can go. We'll clear the room maybe in 5 minutes to give the other folks 15 minutes to get in here. But if there are any questions, if anybody wants to ask of our current panel or the previous panel, please put a hand up quickly. Well, all righty. Well, I think we then will bid you all good afternoon and have a good conference. And can I get another round of applause for our panelists this afternoon? Thank them very much. And thank you all for staying.
Do pick up a free ISOC pen as you leave, and nice to write with.